Welcome to Parents Perspective. Monica and Dan surveyed their assembled group, Jody 7, Denny 5, and little Carrie 2.5, as they prepared to leave their hotel room. "Jody, where's your backpack?" Monica asked. Jody dashed over to his cot and retrieved it from beneath the covers. "Denny, do you have your superhero guys in yours?" "Yeah, except for the two Jody stole," he replied, shooting his brother a meaningful look. "Wanna go home?" announced Carrie, planting her thumb in her mouth and plopping herself and her flannel doll on the floor. Monica checked her fanny pack to be sure she had the juice boxes, crackers, and the city maps. Dan had the guidebook tucked into his jacket pocket. "Well, troops," Dan announced to their band of adventurers, "let's move on out." All Monica could wonder was how real explorers ever got out of their homes. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about sightseeing with kids? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest today helps many families with sightseeing plans. Dee Hoffman operates Children's Concierge, a service that helps families explore cities with pleasure. She has taught elementary school and has worked with preschool curriculum for the Smithsonian Early Enrichment Center and has produced audio tours and activity guides to help families explore Washington, D.C., New York City, London, Paris, and Boston. Dee is the mother of three grown children. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Dee.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being here.
Our opening story sounds only too familiar to most of us. What's the biggest mistake we make when we take our children sightseeing?
Oh, mercy. Well, I think there are two things. One is overplanning, taking on all that responsibility yourself of doing the planning, or underplanning, which is doing none of the planning and just letting what will happen. I mean, I think either way, you can get into really big trouble.
How do you know when you've done too much or when you've done too little? I'm sure it's pretty clear, and then you're really in the soup. But how do you know when you've done too much?
Well, it seems to be the kids will let you know right away. You've made the plans for them. You haven't consulted them. They haven't been involved in the planning. You've taken on too much of that responsibility. So they'll let you know right away. Also, I think parents will get, or at least I have found, and it's certainly true for me, I get real tense because I've got so much invested in it. You know, it's got to be perfect, and the kids have to learn this, and I've planned this, and oh my gracious, if this goes wrong, then I'll be not good somehow, or something like that. That's a real key to me, that I've overplanned, or I've just got too much invested in it, and it'll backfire.
How young is too young for a sightseeing trip? We've got this 2.5-year-old in the story, and we were wondering if that's pushing it a little.
Well, I'm kind of a renegade. I don't think any young is too young. And let me explain. To me, there's a way of thinking of sightseeing and the way most of us think of it, and that is that we're going out there, we're going to see all we can see, we're going to learn about the who, did, what, when, and where. Maybe we're going to learn the history of this or how this sculpture was done or whatever. And little kids, well, it doesn't even have to be little kids, because if we can think about it as adults as well, but little kids don't care who did what, when, and where. And they're not ready for that, and maybe they never will be. But there are lots of things that young children are investigating in their world, even as young as 18 months. You know, they're exploring their world. They're learning about colors. They're learning how the world smells. They're learning how the world feels. They're learning about the light. They're learning about position in space. And all of that can be done very nicely along with the rest of the family.
So you can have different goals for different ages.
Goals for different ages. Different places to be, different ways to explore the exact same space. I think modern art museums are fantastic for young kids. They've got lots of bright colors and weird shapes, open spaces and closed spaces, and you can do all kinds of language things there. So I'm sort of the renegade. I will take a small child anywhere and try to make the world come alive for them.
How do we make a trip exciting?
Making that trip exciting. Well, the first thing I think is you have to be excited yourself. And you all say this very nicely in your book, Parents as Mentors, you really do, about that it comes from you, and kids learn what you present. So if you're not excited about that vacation or that trip or that time to explore, there is very little chance that child will be for very long. They might initially, but they'll read that in you right away. So
don't drag them someplace that you don't
that
really
you
want to go.
No. And frequently families say that to us. Oh, we just want to go where the children want to go. That's all that matters. And I buy into that most of the time. But if you're on a long trip and you've come a long way, that's going to get old really fast. And a better way to do it is to get excited for everybody and help everybody get excited, including yourself. So for me, that's the very first thing. Another way to make the trip exciting is to include everyone in the planning, not just, again, the parent who's going to say, do it, but include everyone. Another thing I suggest to parents all the time, or families all the time, is to get involved before you ever take one step out of the house. Start doing some research then, planning it, knowing yourself, knowing what your kids like to do, and get involved there. Another thought is to make the trip interactive. And that doesn't mean just necessarily making a decision about where you're going to go, but actually finding out where you're going to go and figuring out how to relate to everything that you see on the trip, or many things that you see on the trip. Sometimes kids relate better when there are things to hold, things to take along. We had a father once that brought his 5-year-old daughter to Washington. The father was an architect, and he wanted to visit every historical house in Washington with his 5-year-old daughter.
Oh, dear.
Oh, yes. But she, thank goodness, was into dolls and playing dolls and doll houses. So we gave her parts of houses to look at, pieces of cornices or crown molding that we got at a hardware store, and she carried them along when she went to the different houses to see which one was in which house. We gave her a tea set to carry along, and she actually had tea at one of the houses with one of the docents, who just thought that was just a delicious idea, and so said she would do it. At another house, she had a doorknob to see if the doorknob in that house was like the doorknob that she had. So she had objects, and it was suddenly interactive. And her father, of course, was interested in the architecture and all the houses. So
I can't wait to go and notice the doorknobs and the moldings now.
Oh, you'd be moldings surprised. Take with us. You'd be surprised how it's all different. Furniture legs. Have you ever looked at the legs on a piece of on the furniture in
a
house?
But kids wouldn't think about it.
But sometimes you can get them to interact, connect with what's there, if there's something to hold, to look at, to match, to whatever. So that's another way that it makes it exciting for me. And it's not just unique to children, because grandparents will do that. And I found that parents get into it more when there's stuff, and I really mean stuff like that, that you know, looks for
something
strange.
Special to look for.
Something special to look for.
It makes it a whole lot less amorphous.
Right.
So that you really have something you can focus on,
right.
And especially those of us who feel we're not experts in most of the things we see and take our children to.
Right. It also tends to involve the total person. So that child that likes to move around can move around. That child that's real tactual, I happen to be, and I like to hold things. And it sort of keeps everybody awake. So that's another reason to use objects.
You mentioned involving kids in the planning process. Obviously, you believe we should be doing that. How do we do it? What's the best way to provide autonomy in the decision-making but still avoid family warfare if you have several children of different ages and interests, or several adults of different ages and interests?
I think a first thing to do, and there's no right or wrong, there's no real order to things in my mind, but one thing to do is to have each child think about what he or she really likes to do. We send families a questionnaire, and we ask real silly questions. The families, both mother and father, answer the questions, and each one of the children answer the questions. And then we ask them to decide where they might like to go and which of these they'd like to do. Sometimes we even ask them to put suggestions about places they'd like to go in a hat and draw them out, and then plan that way. And sometimes we ask a younger child to plan for an older child, and an older child to plan for a younger child. So we just try to mix it up and make it a little different. Maybe not the usual way families go about making decisions, because maybe they're into some ruts and some ways that don't work, but just to plan it a different way. And we try to give them tools to do that with. It doesn't always work. But
you're giving new ideas. I don't think most of us think outside the box. We have this brochure, and we're going to plan from this, or this book,
right.
Or we have this map, and that's what we're going to select from.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion about sightseeing with kids. For an audio cassette copy of any Parents Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015. Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dee Hoffman of Children's Concierge about sightseeing with children.
Of course, but I guess there's a lot of pressure when you go to high-profile cities where it's clear that you really should see the following four things.
X, Y, and Z.
In the city.
Right.
Yes. And so how do you deal with that if that doesn't come up in the suggestions that come out of a hat or whatever people want to do?
Well, almost always those suggestions will come up. And just as you said very nicely, it's because people think that's what they should see in those cities. Sometimes, after all the other suggestions come up, the must-sees don't look quite so interesting anymore. They sort of are shifted in priorities because some other things have come up. And so you can get some other places visited that way. Or maybe the biggies are just pass-bys. Or maybe they still stand out as absolute musts. So then you just try to go with the flow with that.
I want to know what some of your silly questions are in your questionnaire, Dee.
Oh.
The Children's Concierge sends questions. What are they?
We have silly questions for parents and silly questions for kids. Some of the questions for children are, imagine you're going on a one-week vacation to outer space. You can pack three games or toys. What will you take? So we can find out a lot about what kids like to do, really like to do, in their spare time. Do you have a jar of pennies or a pocket full of trading cards or a box full of toys? What kinds of things do you collect? If you could decorate your room around a theme, what would you choose? I love it. Little girls will go on and on and on. They will describe in infinite detail how they would do the curtains and the bed skirts. It's so much fun. What's your favorite activity to do with your family? Have you ever seen a dinosaur, alive or dead? What do you want to be doing when you are your parents' age?
And oh, that's do they all say, I hope I'm alive?
Oh, sometimes it does.
When I'm old like that.
You mean that old? You know. We ask the parents, of course, what their occupation is. And then we ask them, is there something they'd rather be doing? Because sometimes they say, I'm a newscaster, but I'd rather be a carpenter. Well, that's a real clue about things they might like to see in a city that they might not have ever thought about, including. What's your favorite activity to do as a family? Do you play a sport? Are you a collector? Getting at the same kind of thing. If you became a scientist, what would you study? If you were a historian, what period of history would you study? Let's see, what would ever compel you to go inside a museum?
Do they say something like my wife?
Husband? Yes. Or sometimes, well, I want the kids to learn to appreciate it.
It's good for my children.
Yes, I hate it, but they'll love it.
But they will love it. What kind of music do you like the best? How do you like the music your kids listen to? And growing number of parents say, oh, I love it.
Oh, isn't that something?
I don't say that, but they they say that.
I think it's really helpful to hear these questions because they're not questions I ever thought about in planning what we were going to do today or where we were going on a trip. I just never thought about these angles, and yet I see the connections.
Well, we're just trying to get underneath and help figure out who that person is. Because like you said, they tend to think that there are certain things to see in a city, and they never even consider that there are these other things, other parts of themselves that they could really explore by going to a destination somewhere.
All this information is very helpful, and it's the kind of thing that parents need to sort of perk up their ears and pay attention to. But are there any fail-safe ingredients that we should really have in our repertoire that would be helpful?
There are two things to think about that I keep telling myself all the time. One is, if you're taking kids anywhere, you have to make sure that you're prepared to soothe the body. And the other one is to fire the spirit. And if whatever that means to you and your family, just keep that in mind. To most families, I think soothing the body means making sure that you have on your trip a place and a time to regroup. that you get tired, you need to just sit, you need to get away from the crowds or away from the activity. So find a place, plan a place or locate a place to sit and rejuvenate and just regroup. Maybe it's just plopping down. Maybe it's reading a story. Maybe it's talking about what you've seen or done, but just a time to be alone together as a group. Another one is to make sure that there's another way to soothe the body is to make sure that you've brought along something that's familiar to people. I even suggest to parents, this is going to sound really weird to parents of young children, is don't wash those pajamas before you bring them because they still smell and feel like home, or bring that pillowcase. I mean, I'm more comfortable when I'm in a strange place if there's something familiar that's part of me that is like that. Mm-hmm. So I think children feel that too. And of course, the third one for me is the all familiar food. Make sure you have food and not just for the children, but for the parents as well. For firing the spirit, the biggest thing is a surprise. Doing something different, bringing along something that's different, looking at something a different way, surprising people by changing the routine. Keeping something familiar soothes the body, but bringing something along that's different or having it looking at something a different way as a surprise will fire the spirit. Something for everyone will fire the spirit, and humor. Looking at it a different way, maybe being willing to laugh at something that you didn't laugh at before.
Seems humor. Like that's a main ingredient
is
in
humor.
A family adventure.
Yeah, and flexibility goes with humor, I think.
Yes.
You know?
That's a big one. We mentioned when we were writing about Washington, D.C., when we wrote our book, we mentioned one of the things you could do with kids is take them ice skating in the evening.
Oh,
and things like that
yes.
we might not think of. Those are good surprises, too, but also good changes, just exactly like what you're
That's
talking
perfect.
About.
Well, you know, even getting parents to ice skate might even be a surprise.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know.
And there are places in the Washington area, and I'm sure most major cities, where you can go all year round to do that. You can also go swimming. You could, you know, lots
yes.
of different things. We were looking for things that families can do in the evening
yes.
with all
oh,
different
that's really
age
important.
Groups.
Well, if you think back about your own childhood or your own past, those events that really stick out in your mind were ones that were surprises.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they were not always good surprises. Sometimes they were disappointing surprises or really not nice surprises. But most of the time they were good surprises, and you remember them.
We had a story that I think we told in the book about a group of students who came to the Washington, D.C. area in the winter, and there was a snowstorm in most of the museums. Everything closed. It's very unusual for that to happen in a major city. And they were staying in a downtown hotel right in the heart of Washington, D.C., and they heard the pleas on the radio and on television for volunteers to come to the hospitals because staff couldn't get from the suburban areas where many of them lived. And so these kids spent some of their time in Washington, D.C. as volunteers in hospitals because they could get to them.
Oh, how
now,
marvelous.
That's a surprise. It's much more memorable than some of the things they might have seen.
Exactly.
They certainly learned different things than
exactly.
they were planning to learn.
There's
the flexibility.
That's right. That's right. That's a marvelous story.
A lot can be said for the people who were with them, the adults
yes.
who
yes.
allowed them to do that.
Yes.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion about sightseeing with kids.
The excellent new book, Parents as Mentors, by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is a practical guide to bringing out the abilities in your child. Parents as Mentors is available at all bookstores.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dee Hoffman of Children's Concierge about sightseeing with children. Dee, what about teens? How do we eliminate the boredom factor when we're traveling with teens?
Well, first of all, I would always suggest involving them in the planning again.
Mm-hmm.
So that they have some ownership and that you're not the sole boss of them. You're not the boss of me. How many times have you heard that from a teen? He's not the boss of me. So there's something for everyone. Frequently, they can be totally in charge of parts of the trip. One suggestion that's worked for us a lot, and it was a surprising discovery, is to look for places along the way during your trip that already have teens. We have found out if we call the education departments at museums and say, where do the teens go in your museum? or where do the school trips go, and where will the school trips be on this day, that teens will do better if there are other teens around. Mm-hmm. It's somehow acceptable, and it's not that I, as a parent, had to say, well, you go over there and look at this, but that the teens sort of show other teens.
It
was a desperate measure, but it sort of worked, and we've passed that along lots of times. Also, making another adult an expert, whether it's a tour guide or a docent at a museum, sometimes even the guard. I don't mean to always use museums as examples. Park Service rangers, someone in a store who can be an expert, because teens, I think, and it's true for lots of people, will listen to someone else rather than someone who's been trying to tell them how to do things, or someone that from whom they're not interested in taking advice. And we've also found that sometimes if you make the teen in charge of the younger child, or planning something for the younger child, or the younger child in charge of planning something for the teen, that sometimes you can get some real humorous situations. Another suggestion is if the parents are willing to put themselves in a humorous situation. We suggested to one family that the parent jump out of the car and act like, or position himself as a father, like the outdoor sculpture, and the other kids took photographs. Well, the father was willing to put himself in a situation where he was not always the best, and everyone else got to benefit from that. So that sort of cut some of that tension that goes on between parents and teens.
As long as he wasn't jumping out of the car
in the middle
when it
of
was
traffic,
moving.
That's right. Going around one of the Washington circles wouldn't really, you know. But that kind of thing, you know.
We talked earlier about how your theory was that there's no child that's too young to come on a family trip. So now we get down to the nitty-gritty about how do we deal with multi-age groups of kids. The 18-month-old who really is not interested in going to a museum, and the 10-year-old who really wants to see how the scientific stuff works and so on.
Or the dinosaurs live or dead.
Right, that's right.
We suggest to parents that they plan something for each child, or we try to help them plan something for each child at almost every stop along their itinerary. And you have to look at it. It does take planning. And people have said to me, well, that's a lot of work. Well, my father used to say you have to do the work sometime. Just decide when you want to do it. Do you want to do it beforehand? Do you want to do it on the spot when everybody's upset? Or do you want to deal with some cleanup later? Mm. And I'd much rather prefer doing it ahead of time. So our suggestions always do involve some planning. But we suggest you think of each of your children and what they might get out of being at a certain place. The younger child can look at the colors at something. An older child might imitate what's happening in an exhibit. And again, I'm stuck on museums here, so forgive me. The oldest child might be reading the dialogue or the dialogue box, the information, and writing in his or her journal about something. But if you know your children and you can decide what they could get out of any particular exhibit or place, go for it, and bring along the equipment that it takes to make that happen. I realize that's a lot of planning. Again, this is another place we've asked an older child to plan for a younger child and a younger child to plan for an older child. That's why we try to do it.
It seems like if they've helped plan it and if they've helped plan for the other child, well, then they're invested in that.
Exactly.
And they might even want to go and see what
exactly.
they've planned.
Exactly, and how
for that
successful they've been.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there's a lot of pride in doing that and being successful at that.
Dee, what resources would you suggest that parents look at when they're preparing to travel and do all this homework that you were talking about?
Oh, a lot of homework I've assigned. I'm sorry. Well, all the city sites all around the world have got good information.
You mean websites?
Websites, I'm sorry, yes, that the cities have all around the world. I have found very useful, if not right there, but the links to other places have been good. All the museums have good websites, so that's another one. The National Park Service has really good websites and good activities to go along with their websites for families. I like that. I love your books, and I do mean books. I think that your Parents as Mentor book is just good thinking and good planning, and it would be something I'd recommend to families.
We have to say that we didn't pay her to say
no,
this.
No, she did not. They absolutely did not. I definitely agree.
That's a nice surprise.
We have a website as well, www.childrensconcierge.com.
You want to say it again?
Okay, www.childrensconcierge.com.
And I think you better spell concierge because it's a lovely French word.
C-O-N-C-I-E-R-G-E. So we invite people to our website and certainly to call us, and we will steer you to other directions and help you find resources.
Do you have a toll-free number they could call?
Yes, we do. It's 1-877-888-5462. 1-877-888-5462.
Thank you.
Well, this has been a resource-packed conversation, and we are so grateful, Dee Hoffman, for you to come in and to tell us all about how we can make traveling with kids a lot more effective and happy for the whole family.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure being here.
Okay. Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and tell us what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning in from. Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids are both available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our books, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.